Hello and welcome to the Laughing Place Podcast. My name is Doobie, and on my right I've got the lovely and talented wife of Doobie named Rebecca.
Hi.
And across from me I've got the... I've got Fanboy.
Not lovely nor talented.
Not to me.
Aww.
And sadly this week we are without Captain John, who is off on assignment in a faraway place, but we look forward to his return next week. And it's a shame he's missing this week because this is an exciting week. But before we get started... Lest I forget, podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. That's podcast at laughingplace.com or 866-718-9408. We always love to hear from you on whatever's happening. If you got to hear the shareholders meeting, want to hear your thoughts on it. If you didn't, get to disney.com/investors and give it a listen because this is your company if you're a shareholder. But even if you're a fan, you feel like it's your company, so you should know what's happening in that area, and it actually is quite interesting. It's a fun listen. It's not just a bunch of dry financial
stuff. Mr. Doobie?
Yes, Evelyn, is there a question?
You spent 180 minutes talking about the Walt Disney Company. Why did you do that?
Give the shareholders meeting a listen. You'll see what Fanboy over there is talking about. And we'll get to Evelyn later. Let's start with the important stuff about today's meeting. Rebecca, as always, listened to the meeting and did some live reporting on it for the latest on laughingplace.com, so she probably has the best feel for exactly what happened today. Why don't you talk about it a little bit, Rebecca?
This meeting was, you know, like most of them for me. Doobie and Fanboy have both been to shareholders meetings, whereas I always am sitting at home with a computer listening to it and sending off little updates as little facts or new information jumps out. There wasn't anything particularly earth-shattering in this shareholder meeting for me. A lot of it's stuff we've heard before, talked about before. I think for me most interesting was what wasn't talked about. The aspects of the company that weren't particularly focused on that I was kind of surprised to not hear. I remember last year's meeting, they talked a lot about ESPN Mobile, which I know is, you know, not here anymore.
They didn't mention that
this year.
Well,
right, but I'm kind of surprised that with the rollout of Disney.com and with the rollout of Disney Mobile that there wasn't more focus. It wasn't completely not mentioned, but I expected a little bit more hype for both of those. And I guess Disney.com got a little bit of that hype last year. And then also, a lot of the floor was shared by Tom Staggs, who's the chief financial officer at one point during today's presentation. Obviously, Bob Iger had a lot of the stage, and then the other individual who took the stage. Oh, I'm sorry, the chairman of the board of directors, John Pepper Jr., who also was a former CEO of Procter & Gamble. He did the main introductions. But the only other person who had the stage today really was John Lasseter. And that kind of that surprised me there. I don't know why, but I guess I expected to see a few more of the big Disney names today. So that was interesting for me.
Now, I've attended all of the shareholder meetings since 2000 except this one. And everyone is different. And there was one in Philadelphia that they started off with the business portion and had about a 10-hour, felt like, line of business presentation. Everyone from media networks, and it went on forever, probably because they just wanted to delay the results of the Eisner vote.
Vote,
yeah. Which, if you guys remember that was the one where Michael Eisner forgot to give the results of the vote at the end of the presentation.
And, yeah, he started walking off. Didn't he just pretty much start walking off stage?
Thanks for coming. Have a magical day.
And then you hear, vote.
Because all these people have just suffered through. I mean, I love Disney presentations, but...
It was long.
Yeah. And it was funny because they would tell you if you left, you couldn't come back. And so all these people sort of sitting, like, doing the pee dance and in their seats. But, and, you know, sometimes I remember one in Denver where it snowed in. They just basically talked about Destination Disney for an hour, and that was it. Okay. Some they have Dick Cook come out. Last year was more of a sort of broad... Base on, they talked about how each division was going on Bob's three strategic priorities, which everybody knows now. But this one basically seemed like Bob talked, gave his little sort of shtick. Then they brought out John Lasseter. He did his thing because they felt like they needed to bring out John Lasseter, and the end.
Well, you being a veteran of many shareholders meetings, and you probably get a sense of then what happens in the year following, the way this one went, does that give you an idea of what's on the mind of Disney right now?
Well, to me, it's just it's basically nothing's changed since last year, because it's the same. I felt like I was listening to a rerun at some point from last year. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because you don't want to keep changing your vision. But John Lasseter talked about what he's working on. I mean, he was able to talk more about Disney stuff, because last year actually took place before the Pixar deal was finalized. I thought it was interesting. No one brought up ABC Radio at all in that sale. It'll never be completed. And, you know, very little talk about – they talked a little bit about A Year for a Million Dreams. Not a lot of talk about Parks and Resorts. I really got a feeling like, you know, we've always heard that, yes, they're still going to make Touchstone movies. I got a feeling like if Bob had his way, there would be none, although from a sort of political studio standpoint, that's probably not a reality.
He did say something like, and there'll be fewer and fewer of those when talking about non-Disney movies.
The thing for me was that I took from this is that the message that has been kind of pounded in a lot of what these are kind of the economic-driven meetings, the financial-focused meetings, is that Disney's content is king, in that if you have a successful Disney film, that's what's going to drive everything else they do. It's going to drive our theme parks because people are going to come see the attractions or the shows based on that. It's going to drive the merchandise. It's going to drive our other subsidiary areas like Radio Disney, like ABC Family, like Disney Channel, where, you know, where these areas can be distributed. Also, you know, home video. And so the fact that the majority of today's presentation was focused on feature animation and what's coming out of feature animation, to me, it would just really cementing the fact that they see that as the foundation of their, I guess, you know, their pyramid, as it were. Everything, that's the roots. That's where everything flows from.
Which I find interesting, because there's been a huge movement in order to sort of keep the natural ebb and flow of animation, keep from the company being focused on that, is creating intellectual property in other divisions, whether it's consumer products or video games and publishing. Disney Channel obviously is making a lot of IP that is being used across the company. I mean, Parks and Resorts is a little bit different, but Pirates of the Caribbean, Jungle Cruise, they create stuff as well. So it's – and I don't see – I mean, if you listen to the other presentations that he does, not necessarily as broadly for such a broad audience. You can also – if you go to Disney.com/investors, you can also listen to a Q&A he did for the Beer Stearns media conference on Monday. And you sort of get a different angle. And yes, content has been – content, technology, international, those are Bob's things, and I agree 100% that's where he's going. But I think – I don't want to be fooled into believing that Bob spends 90% of his time worrying about feature animation. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason John Lasseter is doing and Ed Catmull have such a spotlight on him is because I think Bob's just saying, hey, do your thing. I trust you. I'm going to focus on technology. I'm going to focus on the parks. I'm going to focus on ABC. So you almost got the feeling that Bob was the Roy, John's the Walt, and that was sort of the way they were going with this meeting.
And who would be the Ron Miller then?
That'd be Chris Sanders.
Is this more of a kind of an answer to, I guess, what Wall Street expectation might be? Because I mean, in many ways, this is kind of. I mean, Disney is known as an animation company. So is this kind of, you know, learning what it is that your audience wants to hear from you and focusing your message accordingly?
Besides Crazy Evelyn, the audience here is Disney fans. Your hardcore investors have their own presentation a month ago. But, yeah, they know that the people here don't really care about ESPN. Right. I mean, as well, they should care about ESPN, but they don't. And so they're saying, okay, you know what? You guys want to hear John. He's the winner. I mean, he's a dynamic speaker, even if he is being interrupted about stock options.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of John, he did have quite a lengthy presentation. And I remember a couple weeks ago, I believe Rebecca asked if we thought that John Lasseter would make a point of focusing on Meet the Robinsons. And we all gave our opinion on that. And he definitely did talk quite a lot about Meet the Robinsons. In fact, he told an interesting story about that. Maybe Rebecca would like to relate.
Well, in talking about Meet the Robinsons, Lasseter dovetailed into that topic by relating stories from when he and Ed Catmull first arrived on the scene as the Pixar merger was being completed, and they took a tour of the Disney animation facilities. They went down to the Disney studios, and he said that they spent a lot of time, they were talking with the various directors down there, bringing in the mindset that they have at Pixar, where Pixar is a very director-driven studio. The stories are the passion of the director. And he talked with Steve Anderson, who's the director on Meet the Robinsons. And I guess Steve's story particularly caught him, because he talked about how in sharing the story behind Meet the Robinsons, which is the story of a young boy who's adopted, and he goes searching, and he ends up in the future, and this is where he finds his family. Lasseter said that the story, you know, it brought tears to his eyes, and in talking with Steve, he realized that Steve said that this was his own story, that Steve himself was adopted, and that the story and its message of, you know, not focusing on the past but looking forward and looking to the future is where, you know, your reality is. You know, he said it really caught him, and so Lasseter talked about Meet the Robinsons in that way as a very touching story, and a story with a message that had meaning and special focus for that director.
And it was interesting to hear him say that. I obviously wasn't aware of that story, and I thought you could feel the emotion in Lasseter's voice, and it was quite touching. It was a touching moment during the presentation. And then later on he talked about Ratatouille, and while he definitely seemed to believe in Meet the Robinsons and put his whole heart behind Meet the Robinsons, Ratatouille to me was like on a whole different level in how Lasseter related about that.
But I don't want to brief too much into that, though, because Ratatouille is a movie that John Lasseter's been involved with since the beginning, and Meet the Robinsons isn't. And so he's going to care more about a project he's nurtured and brought forth with all the difficulties that it's rumored to have.
But Pixar the company is a project he's been involved with since the beginning, too. Is that going to carry on indefinitely? I mean,
But you listen to him, and you get the feeling that he cares about Disney. I mean, he loves Pixar. Pixar's his baby. But he understands the importance of Disney. It means a lot to him to be a part of Disney. And, I mean, there's some things that sort of you go like, well, is he putting a little too much attention on Pixar and not attention to Disney? But, you know, because he's not letting Disney just ride off into the sunset. He's really working on it.
I have to admit, I didn't get that impression of a favoritism type nature as much as I got the impression when he was talking about that with Ratatouille there were unique challenges. I mean, he talked about the fact that with Ratatouille they're bringing in new technologies. They you know, once again they found that the boundaries of computer animation didn't tell the story in the way they wanted to, so they've had to once again expand those boundaries, and so we're going to see some new animation techniques utilized. And so for me, I saw that similar passion when he talked about American Dog, funny enough, because I, based on the stories on the net and the removal of Chris Sanders, who I'm a big Stitch fan and have met Chris, and so I'm a big fan, so that was disheartening to me. But in hearing John talk about the American Dog today, I felt a genuine passion for the story and for the desire to tell it. And there he talked about how they're going to use a new technique to have like a watercolor element, a watercolor background element, a softness to the computer animation that hasn't been seen before. And so I think once again, that passion was there. So maybe it's just this, you know, kind of the doing something new. I mean, Walt always
I would hope that there's new stuff in Meet the Robinsons as well. I mean, is Pixar the only portion that can do something new?
No, I mean, I think Disney's doing it, but Meet the Robinsons is probably not the most innovative movie we've ever seen, because it was almost done when it came to
being. What surprises me, and I'm not one to look for something like this. In fact, I'm kind of surprised Rebecca disagrees with me on this, which is fine. But given what happened with the Golden Globes, or
right?
Given what happened with that, given just a lot of the scuttlebutt going around, he was out there to give a big, firm push to Meet the Robinsons, and I'm just a little surprised that, to me, someone who doesn't look for such things, that it came across that way to me. I'm happy if I'm wrong, but that's
the way I felt. I mean, you know, when he talked about Toy Story 3, he was very passionate about it because that was his first movie. And then you listen to Frog Princess. I mean, and let's not fool around. That movie was announced here because it takes place in New Orleans and there's meetings in New Orleans.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it might not have been announced, but he still talked with passion about restoring the Disney legacy. And so I think the real way we're going to be able to compare is in 3 or 4 years when you're looking at movies that, you know, John helped Disney develop. And I mean, you know, like just like there's a brain trust over at Pixar, I know they're creating a sort of, I forget what they call it, but a similar thing at Disney so that, they each are diverging but sharing.
No, it's hard for me to say, because honestly, with some of the stories that have been coming out and some of the rumors that I've been reading, and obviously they're rumors, I don't, you know, speak to these people personally, so I have no idea. But some of the things that I've seen, I've been a little concerned about the trend, about the tone of some of the comments I've heard from John Lasseter, and the lack of the Disney mention with the Golden Globe Award. And then just a couple of other things. You know, they had me a little concerned that maybe things had moved too fast, and so perhaps there was a little ego there. But, I mean, he's entitled. I'm not saying he's not entitled to have ego. He's an accomplished man, and he's done great things, and I think with that always goes some. But I was concerned that maybe there was a little too much power, a little too fast, and I've seen in my own life really decent people kind of lose their way with that, and so I was, you know, a little concerned, and I didn't see that today, and I was very happy about that.
What was not mentioned was Rapunzel and Braided, and every other animated film that we know of that's in the works, WALL-E, what have you, was mentioned. So what's going on there? Is it just, you know, too far off in the distance? But they've mentioned this film at annual meetings before. I find that curious. I don't want to breathe
and
in.
And at fan meetings, I mean, they showed the...
And it looked beautiful. I mean, and Glenn Keane is not, you know, someone to frown upon, so I don't know what's going on there.
But for me, the most exciting thing that Lasseter said was the Frog Princess announcement. I am so excited about that.
So in a nutshell, tell us about the Frog Princess.
Well, I know that it's set in New Orleans. It's supposed to be around the jazz era. It's inspired by the music of the New Orleans area, jazz and whatnot. He said it would feature voodoo spells and the bayou and the mighty Mississippi. But the best part is that it's going to feature an African-American princess, is what John Lasseter said. The Associated Press reported Black Princess, and I know some people preferred various words there, so I'm going to use both right now. But I am very excited about this, because this is an area that I thought Disney has been sadly lacking in for quite a while. I looked online and saw that some of the names reported to be considered for the role are Alicia Keys, Jennifer Hudson. The princess herself is pictured in an Associated Press photo. They have Randy Newman on stage with a local jazz band, and the picture of the Frog Princess is there on screen. And it's cool. I'm excited.
Now, in that picture, she bears a striking resemblance to another rumored voice, who would be...
She looks a lot like Beyonce in that photo to me, but Alicia Keys, I think, too. But I saw in her
definitely
eyes,
not Jennifer Hudson, though.
No. Mm-hmm. I saw in her eyes a little Beyonce look. But
Jennifer Hudson would provide great marketing, because, you know, she started her career with Disney. That'd be neat. I mean,
that'd be a great story.
Speaking of marketing, when, you know, this whole meeting had a New Orleans bend to it, they brought Robin Roberts from the area out, and she seemed honestly just very emotional, and that was awesome. A lot of the question-answer guests came up and just thanked them for coming, which was nice to see people appreciating, you know, the little thing Disney did. But, and I was going somewhere with that.
No, I was surprised by all the connections that kind of magically worked out with this, because, like you say, they had Good Morning America's Robin Roberts, and then Willow Bay's mother, who Willow Bay being the wife of Bob Iger, her mother is from New Orleans area.
He's married to a celebrity?
And, yes. And what was the other one? Oh, and Randy Newman apparently also had a connection with New Orleans.
I think it's that he grew up here, didn't he?
Grew up there. And Randy Newman has been brought to the Frog Princess. So it was really interesting to me to see the way it kind of all the little pieces came together to make New Orleans like the obvious place to go.
I thought when he talked about I Love L.A., he was talking about Los Angeles, but he was really talking about Louisiana. Now it comes together. Oh, they got to take that out of the DCA loop.
So now it looks like Frog Princess, maybe the premiere will be in Louisiana did for Hunchback.
I think that's what I was going to try and say.
I know.
I think Bob Iger confirmed that. And the most exciting thing for Frog Princess for me, which is not necessarily news, but at least officially confirmed, is that it is, as they put it, a classic fairy tale, and it's hand-drawn, and it's a musical. And
yay.
I think that's the first one that combines those three since Mulan.
And Musker and Clemens, so you're talking...
Yeah, Musker and Clemens and...
Little Mermaid.
Oh, Randy Newman, so you can't have everything, but it's still pretty exciting. Oh,
man. He made some great songs.
Yeah.
I will go say it.
Yeah, but it was rumored before that it would be Alan Menken.
Right, and if you're going to do a Disney musical, you want
to... Oh, loved his work on Home on the Range.
Yeah, I know. But actually, that'll be 5 years since Disney's done a hand-drawn, and by the time this one comes to screen, it will have been 5 years because Home on the Range, and then so not until 2009, I guess, is Frog Princess. So.
Exciting stuff.
Anyone remember Home on the Range? That's like the movie everyone forgot.
I haven't even seen
it. You know what's really sad?
Movie.
We haven't even seen it. It came out at a. I think we were getting ready to move or something. We didn't end up seeing it.
One other minor thing mentioned by Bob Iger in response to a question was Song of the South, which, if I'm not mistaken, at last year, not the most exciting movie in the world, according to Fanboy.
Fanboy and Doobie both fell asleep when we watched that film once.
I didn't, actually, but I should have, because it would have had a better time.
You fell asleep.
Okay, fine. Last year, if I'm not mistaken, at the shareholders meeting, Bob Iger said, we are not going to release Song of the South. It's just not appropriate to do. And this year, he said that given the response to last year, they're now reconsidering that and they're looking into it. He certainly didn't give a firm yes by any stretch of the imagination, but he said it's once again up for consideration. So that was, to me, that was some very interesting news to come out of today's meeting. Any thoughts on Song of the South, Fanboy? One of your favorites?
See, I mean, I'm not the best judge of political correctness by any stretch of the imagination.
You manage to offend me almost every day.
That's good. I'm like a little Girl Scout. I can turn my pin around now. They, you know, like when Girl Scouts, they do a good deed, they get to turn their little heart pin.
Sorry, I don't have much Girl Scout experience, but I'm glad to know you know.
Cookies. Anyway, what was I talking about?
Song of the South.
Oh, Song of the South. For political reasons, I don't know, but just out of preserving the Disney brand, I don't think that should be. It's worse than Cinderella 3.
So this has nothing to do with political correctness. This is just about
quality.
Bad movies need to stay in the vault.
Exactly. I mean, when was the last time Saludos Amigos was available on DVD?
It is not a bad movie. You guys are wrong. It is not a bad movie.
Two words, Bobby Driscoll.
It is not. I understand that it's not the most fast-paced and energetic, but it's a beautiful film. It's honestly one of my dad's favorites, as I remember. I remember going to see it with him when I was young. But, I mean...
Speaking of movies that put you to sleep, Pirates 3 did not get any... got almost no mention today. Was that just a matter of they focused on animation today? Or I know there have been rumors that management may not be as thrilled as they could be with what they've seen from Pirates 3 so far. Any thoughts, anybody?
Well, the sizzle reel they showed at the beginning, that was a majority of Pirates. So Pirates did get its talk.
Okay.
But, you know, and I know there's all sorts of... There's all sorts of rumors that Disney doesn't like the movie or whatever. I haven't heard anything, but that's not my key focus. I wish the captain was here. But right. So, yeah, but, I mean, but live action wasn't a focus. You didn't hear anything about Enchanted, Underdog, National Treasure 2. So I don't know.
I hope they got to see some good Underdog footage in the location at least.
Yeah. One Nation, Underdog.
I must admit I was really surprised that there wasn't a larger mention of Pirates considering that they were in the New Orleans area, which has kind of got that, you know, little pirate feel with the bayous and, you know, the pirates, you know, came up into that area a bit. So it surprised me. I'm not reading a lot into it, though, but it did surprise me.
They did start with that, which was interesting. Was it Bob Iger? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bob Iger, not the chairman. Bob Iger came up and he talked about how it's about time they've come to New Orleans since they've had a New Orleans square since for the past, what do you say,
41 years. That was John Pepper,
Mr.
the chairman.
Okay, so that was interesting.
If he was a sultan, he would be Sultan Pepper.
I miss Aladdin. That was a good show. Still is a good show. I'm gone. The show's still there.
I mean, he talked about pirates. He talked about pirates when he was talking about the strength of Disney, and that is in its opportunity to have the multi platform. I don't know how to describe it, but to me, it's like a multi platform release of something. And he used High School Musical as like the ultimate in the Disney model, and that is you create this fantastic film. It's on Disney Channel. It's a phenomenon, so therefore Disney Consumer Products has, you know, all this merchandise about it. Disney Records has record sales because of the album strength. The Radio Disney, it plays there, so strong ratings there. You have your Disney theme park shows around it. You know, so he used High School Musical as, you know, the kind of the pinnacle of the Disney, what Disney can do. And in that, he also briefly touched upon Pirates and how Pirates, you have the strong movies, which feed the theme parks, which also have the multiplayer online thing that's coming and, you know, various other things. And that's kind of where he mentioned Pirates.
Neither of which are animated.
No, exactly.
Now, it's always interesting in meetings like this, just the kind of thing, sometimes set off the cuff, sometimes not, that just are interesting to hear. They don't necessarily have any meaning at all, but it's just interesting. I'm going to throw out some of mine if you guys have any. I thought it was interesting that the very first specific product mentioned was High School Musical, and I think that, again, goes to show how huge that is. I thought it was funny that in talking about Bob Iger, he said that the company we acquired, Pixar, whereas John Lasseter said Pixar and Disney merging. That's funny.
For the record, Disney acquired Pixar.
Yeah. while talking about WALL-E, John Lasseter said that WALL-E is the most charming character we have ever created, and given some of Pixar's creations, especially,
Finding Nemo.
Yeah, that's saying something, so I'm looking forward to that. And then when they showed the Ratatouille clip, and it was a long clip, it was a 12-minute clip, coming out of that clip, there was a normal applause, and I don't know, maybe the mic picked it up a little bit after it ended, but it was a normal applause like you might expect. Coming out of the song done by Randy Newman for Frog Princess, the applause was just absolutely thunderous. And, you know, you have to realize it was done live and that's special and all of that. But, I mean, it was a thunderous, thunderous applause at that point.
And it continued for quite a while because those listening online, we don't get to hear or see the video clips that they show. So they cut away and give us some of the worst renditions of Disney music I've ever heard while we wait for these clips to be done. And so, and then they, you know, cut back as soon as the clip is over. And usually, you know, you hear a smattering of applause as the clip dies down or whatever. But in this case, you heard applause continue and then a little bit of talking almost over the applause. I mean, it really seemed to invoke quite an emotional response. Now, it could be that it also is just a boon for, you know, New Orleans. You have that New Orleans passion pouring into it as well.
One thing I thought was interesting is John Pepper was asked during the Q&A about having someone from the Disney family on the board. And he sort of milled about it, talked about he wanted a diverse board and such. And then Bob Iger came up and sort of interrupted and says, you know, we're honored to have Roy Disney as a director emeritus and that he has an office and is welcome to speak at any time. And so, you know, it really made me feel like Bob's thinking about Roy, whereas John Pepper might not be.
Which would make sense based upon the different levels of experience they've had within the company and over the years. I mean, John Pepper is new to the Disney board, as I recall. He came in January. Oh, he did. It has been a year. Okay.
And the last thing I wanted to mention anyway about the shareholders meeting is something that's kind of a funny aspect of every Disney shareholders meeting. And what's her name?
Evelyn Y. Davis.
And who is Evelyn Y. Davis, who interrupted so rudely John Lasseter as he wound down his presentation?
She is an influential shareholder. She attends over 40 shareholder meetings a year. She lives in the Watergate Hotel, so she meets and greets senators and congressmen and the like. And she's very rowdy and a huge advocate for shareholder rights and that sort of thing. She's proposed a green mail proposal 3 years. The first year it actually got the majority of shareholder approval, and Disney changed their bylaws because of it. There's rumors that GM actually gave her a car in exchange for not showing up at the meetings. And so she's on CNBC every once in a while. She wasn't at the meeting last year in California, so it actually saddened a few people.
Peaceful?
Yeah, and she hasn't come across like she knows her stuff. She knew about the Anaheim deal. She does her research. She publishes a newsletter, and the name's escaping me at this point, but it's a very high-priced stockholder newsletter that all the executives subscribe to, according to her. She's a Holocaust survivor. She talks very funny.
She's Dutch, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
The newsletter is called Highlights and Lowlights.
Yes. I wanted to say Headlines and Legends, but that's just an NBC show.
If you do a search for her on Google or whatever, the articles that come up are invariably various stories from various GMs or CEOs from the shareholder meetings and the interchanges that they've had with her. They described one, I forget who it was. I want to say it was like at the General Motors conference. They described the gentleman who was chairing the meeting at that particular moment as bracing himself as he saw who was at the microphone. And so, I mean, she has this reputation, throughout the industry. But I think for a lot of us who go to the Disney shareholders meeting, it's really kind of our only exposure to that world. And so it's very interesting and entertaining, and it can be very frustrating. And you could hear some guests at the
sit down.
Yeah, some people asking her to sit down.
Because
she aside from the usual question and answer portion, I believe it was actually her voice that we could hear faintly in the background during John Lasseter's presentation, interrupting the
basically
presentation with some with some concerns that she had. We couldn't quite make out what she was saying because she didn't have a mic at that time, but her voice is carries very well.
And so it's quite distinctive.
Yeah, so you could hear her in the background there, and it took a few moments before they were able
to pretty much just let her go for a while.
The situation. If and Mr. Lasseter didn't remark on what she was saying or anything. He seemed to just pretty much...
I think he tried to at one point and couldn't get a word in, and then finally he just went on with his presentation.
Yeah, he just continued with his presentation.
If there's one thing I miss about Michael Eisner, it's the way she would go, Mr. Eisner! Mr. Eisner! And, I mean, it was a special bond Eisner had with Mrs. Davis, and I really miss it. The funny thing about Evelyn is that she hates the presentation part. She hates the magic. She hates the show. And so she always complains, you spent an hour and 180 minutes or, you know, whatever it happens to be that year talking about movies or entertainment. And then there's always a Disney fan who's like, I like that stuff. You know, because honestly, do Disney fans who care who the accountant is for the Walt Disney Company? I mean, it's been PricewaterhouseCoopers LLC forever, and we just move on. But so it's interesting to see that she does not have any love loss for Roy or Stanley Gold. In fact, that's her Greenmail proposal was actually in response to Roy Disney and Stanley Gold. They're afraid that they were going to take advantage of that.
The thing I found interesting in her comments was that she, as I recall, she took credit, and she takes credit in her remarks at this particular meeting for being a force behind the ouster of Roy and Stan from the board. And I found that an interesting statement to make. And it was funny because in the Q&A portion that followed later, one of the shareholders, an obvious Disney fan, I can't remember which it was. I wish I could give him credit. You know, said if you and Ms. Davis, you know, if you were the responsible in any way for the departure of Roy Disney, you should be ashamed. I thought that was a very, very interesting response from a Disney fan.
She is by no means immodest. She talks about how when she talks to a senator, it's not just some little wanking senator. It is, you know, chairmen of committees, and she is Mrs. Evelyn Y. Davis. And it's very interesting.
And we've already given her enough time in this podcast. Let's move on to another topic, revisiting a topic we talked about last week. We're going to talk a little bit more about the big announcement last week at Disney World with the Four Seasons and with the Western Beltway. We asked one of our readers over in England who has a special affinity for the Disney Company as a whole and for the business side and for its history. In fact, when we met him in Florida a couple months ago, we thought this guy needs to meet Fanboy because this is like a fanboy with an accent. So we asked him to give us his thoughts on the Four Seasons deal and the Western Beltway, and he brought in an international perspective, which was quite interesting as well. So we're going to listen to the Four Seasons part first, and we'll talk a little bit more about it.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with the Four Seasons development. I think it's quite interesting that they're going to be building some houses, whether they're like alternative vacation club style houses, similar to the Disney Vacation Club or the Marriott Vacation Villages, or whether you're actually going to be able to buy them at Celebration. It's really not all that new. I remember as a kid at Walt Disney World, the tree houses being dubbed a golf resort, and similar with the Disney Inn. And at one stage, I remember reading how Roy Disney Sr. had considered actually selling the tree houses to the public. So the idea, they always say in Imagineering that no good idea ever gets left behind. And while I might not fully agree with this idea, it's certainly not a new idea, not by Disney anyway. But what is interesting is, some people may be aware, but not many, the Disneyland Paris golf course, which is a part of the Disneyland Paris resort, is surrounded by 251 two-bedroom houses that are rented out to the public. In fact, the Blues are staying there later on this year just to see what they like. And they're owned by the Marriott Vacation Club. Quite ironic, because of course, as some people know, in California at Newport Beach, originally Disney Vacation Club, we're hoping to develop some land on the beach there, which is now also a Marriott Vacation Club. What's interesting is they've broken from the Marriott brand, or working with the Marriott brand here, and they've brought the Four Seasons on board. It's going to be quite an interesting development to watch. Certainly nothing new. I just hope that the golf courses remain as good as they've always been.
Well, that was very interesting. I know very little about Disneyland Paris, because that has a whole other economic model, and it's really something I look forward to learning about. But this Four Seasons thing's going to be interesting. In fact, if you listen to the Bear Stearns presentation, Disney.com/investors, my favorite URL, besides laughingplace.com, of course.
Very good.
That presentation is more of a Q&A than a presentation. And some people were talking about, have you thought about third-party hotel stuff? But I was surprised by the number of people in the investment community who did not approve of the Four Seasons deal. And they hearkened back to the Swan and Dolphin deal, because they talked about how that part of that was to get into the convention business by bringing in someone who understood conventions. So they're saying, why are you going to make that same mistake by trying to get in the luxury end when – if you just work a little bit harder, there's no reason Disney can't do it, which is something we've been saying for a while. And also, the opportunity cost of, while there's plenty of land, why don't you do it? And then Iger's response was, while there might be a little bit of opportunity cost in losing that land, that the Four Seasons brand is, something beyond Disney, and that they probably will get into that in the near future. And so, to me, it just seems like, why bother with the Four Seasons thing? But, what do I know?
It still feels like you mentioned last week, it still feels like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, there's just something beyond this that we only see this portion of it, and there's something that this is like a step towards, or this is a part of a bigger puzzle. I just feel like I'm seeing half of a picture right now, like they've unveiled like one little card or something.
You know that Arabian prince that's an investor at Disneyland Paris?
Yes.
He is a key shareholder in Four Seasons.
Yes.
And so that makes sense on the Disneyland Paris side, and you wonder, money still rules all, but maybe that has something to do with this deal, and I don't know.
That is interesting, though, that the investors, at least part of the investing community, isn't so excited about it, because I know often we've talked and you've told me how the investors have always pushed for Disney to spin off their hotels and to outsource them basically completely to a company that specializes in that. So,
and there still was that message during the investment conference, but I guess Bob's done a good job under the table saying, and by pointing to the Swan and Dolphin, saying it's an integrated business. It's not like Universal, where there's a lot that's connected between the hotels and the parks. I mean, Magical Express makes no sense if you don't have the parks, or Extra Magic Hours would just go away, because that's from if they were two separate businesses, there'd be no way to work out that deal. And now with the cruise lines, they share so much with the hotels, it just makes no sense.
Oh, that made me happy. And then, of course, the other big announcement was regarding the expansion on Western Beltway, and Dave Wazabalu was kind enough to send us some words about that as well.
I think the Disney fan community is going to be a little bit up in arms about the announcement today, but to be honest, I don't think it's anything altogether that new. We know that in the early 70s, the development of the Crossroads shopping center out in Lake Buena Vista certainly was a Disney venture. And indeed, out in the Val d'Europe in Paris, they've been building a new town there. There are other hotel vendors that have built on Disney property, Pierre & Vacances, Holiday Inn, Kyriad, Mövenpick, My Travel. So I don't think anyone was really shocked by today's announcement. And also what's quite interesting is the fact that they've gone for two tiers, a luxury development under the Four Seasons brand, and then the more economy-based development about the size of Animal Kingdom. But to be honest, with the current climate, that's quite smart. What we know is Walt Disney World has a real issue booking, or rather has an issue of being overbooked on a lot of the economy and moderate accommodations. We know particularly the British demographic over here in the UK a lot of them tend to go and stay on iDrive because they perceive Disney as being too expensive, but would probably be inclined to change that if there was a place to stay. And for the luxury jet set, as great as Animal Kingdom or the Grand Animal Kingdom Lodge or the Grand Floridian or Wilderness Lodge is, it's not quite the five-star exclusive getaway that people are looking for, and perhaps the Four Seasons can deliver that. So I'll be watching with great interest. Personally, I'm saddened that it's not some big Disney enterprise, but given the fact that they are a business and make no bones about being a business these days, not surprised. I just hope they do a really great job, and I really am looking forward to how it unfolds.
I guess all I can say to that is ditto. I mean, he more eloquently than I could explained what I was feeling when I heard this announcement. The frustration with the concept that Disney is letting somebody else, you know, have some of their property for development, but yet the hope that it will still, you know, have that Disney feel, that Disney thing, which, by the way, Crossroads does not, and so I'm hoping that there will be some, I'm hoping that this development may have more of a in-between feel between Crossroads and Downtown Disney.
Right, and I, while I'm very concerned about the Four Seasons deal, I have no problem with the Beltway development, because I view it as more of a Crossroads-esque venture, as off the highway before you enter the property, and, but if you look at the architecture, it looks like it's Disney, it's a Disney-esque outdoor mall, with just not Disney tenants, and I'm completely cool with that. And I mean, it's actually exciting because that's something they could take elsewhere, whereas opposed to sort of Downtown Disney is a little bit more of an investment. So yeah, I mean, I agree with Dave Wasbaloo exactly, and Rebecca, that I hope it's Crossroad-esque plan in terms of, you know, value, food, lodging, with a more of a Downtown Disney-esque bow.
Given the subject a couple weeks ago where Disney was talking about maybe doing some urban development completely away from Disney property, do you think this may be the start of that, or at least a model for what that could be?
Absolutely, and that's why when this came out and the key people kept talking about it as Downtown Disney 2, I really think they had the wrong idea. This is not supposed to be part of the Disney experience. This is the crossroads before you get into the Disney experience, and I think a lot of people were misinterpreting this. Which, I mean, it happens, but it's this. Think more Crossroads in terms of location with a Disney design.
My question regarding this, though, that comes up is, oftentimes when there's breaking news at Disney Resort here, the closest that the TV cameras and whatnot usually get to that action is Crossroads. Or, for example, right now we've got a lot of demonstration's the wrong word because that tends to have a negative connotation, but the union is rallying outside of property there at Crossroads. Is this property now going to be another location where those protests can occur?
As of right now, no, because it's still on Disney property.
Okay.
Crossroads was sold, so that's right. Not Disney property. Now, is the long-term idea to sell this property? Probably. I would be surprised if Disney decided to hang on to it for a long period of time. But at first, it will be Disney property. But I mean, it's just there's going to be an entry point somewhere.
Oh,
so
yeah, totally.
If they decide to protest there, it's no worse. It's going to be really no different than
my Crossroads. Thought was only just I was as a news a little bit, you know, I kind of dance on the edge of news. I was just thinking, is it a location where they could actually get some sort of sightline that might have something more Disney-esque in it than right now?
Well,
all they can
get
is that little, you know, entrance.
And that's the same.
Mickey.
That's the same view they're going to get. And so, well, will you know it's on Disney property? The guests won't know it's on Disney property. Is sort of the feeling I'm getting. And just like Crossroads, you went there for years. It was been Disney property. No one's ever like, woohoo, we're at Disney World.
Right.
They were at McDonald's.
Right.
I go, woohoo, I'm at McDonald's. Actually, I prefer the Taco Bell over there.
I'm a big fan of Jungle Gyms. Oh, wait, they closed.
That Taco Bell is one of the most efficient I
have
ever been to.
You can go to that Taco Bell at 12:30 with 15 cars in line and be out of there in 5 minutes,
it is
the drive-thru.
It's
amazing.
And they're so polite. I've never had polite service as that Taco Bell.
You need to hand out some casting scout cards over there.
I mean,
that's
dang.
Amazing.
I go, you know, they keep putting in these new automated ordering things at a lot of the quick service restaurants at Disney World, because we just don't have the people to have that many friendly cashiers. We need to go take care of those
Taco Bell.
They're amazing. I'm seriously, they're amazing. We go there periodically, and I'm always amazed by the service.
Maybe, if they're providing excellent level of service, maybe instead of putting them in the Western Beltway development, that's the wrong avenue. They need to go to the Four Seasons if they're providing that fifth star level quality.
I'm going to ask a question to you two. I tend to know where Rebecca stays, and we don't do a whole lot of Four Seasons.
Two chalupas.
But Fanboy, I know, in his privileged life, has stayed quite a few upscale places. I've read some thoughts on the board that as nice as the Yacht Club and the Grand Floridian and all of them are, and they are nice, Disney really just, at least with their current properties, they can't get to that next level. They are definitely not a Four Seasons, not necessarily because Disney doesn't want them to be. They just don't reach that level. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think it's part of the mentality, though, is that has not been the focus of this company. You know, when you stay at a normal Four Seasons, you're staying there because you want to golf and you want to have a luxury resort experience. When you're staying at Disney, you're there because you want to go to the theme parks. I mean, and Disney Vacation Club has sort of retrained a lot of people, so now the resorts themselves are there. But I just don't think that Disney trains their cast on a resort-level experience as much as they do train them on a Disney experience, and that's different. And you're not being pampered. It's not about staying in the room. I mean, a lot of these places don't have any place open for lunch because, quite honestly, they don't expect anyone to be there. And the reason why people who might spend hundreds of dollars a night on a hotel room for a luxury resort stay at the All Star Sports, because that's not why they're coming to Disney World. And so, is Disney at the level of Four Seasons? No, but could a mentality change and maybe some more training bring them there? I think so.
When I think of quality hotels, the hotel that comes to my mind always first is the Muse that you and I stayed at in
New York,
Times Square. That was the most exquisite hotel that I've been to. Another exquisite hotel was the Portofino Bay at Universal's. I think that's a Lowe's hotel. But both of those, for me, what set both of those apart and why I think of them in many ways as being a better quality than my stays at Disney, Grand Floridian, or Animal Kingdom, is the bed. I typically don't find the quality of the bed in a Disney hotel all that exquisite. I mean, from the bedding to the actual mattress itself. I know that sounds silly, but
no, it doesn't, because it makes you wonder why that's the case.
And like at the Lowe's, the Portofino Bay, the marble tile and the sunken Roman tub. I mean, I can't really think of having that type of experience at a Disney with the deep tub,
right.
and
that was just a basic room there. It wasn't anything special.
No, and that, I mean, but that's an. I mean, we were able to go there on a very special rate.
But
it was
no more
still
than the Grand Floridian.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, it's not.
But
he pays the bills, not me.
But,
so I don't know.
But I think if you look at the cruise line, and they do things like change out the beds and have those H2O shampoos, and I mean,
yes.
Staterooms by the nature of the business are smaller, but they offer that level of service. So maybe the resorts just need to talk to their partners in the cruise line and say, hey, we're going to retrofit the Contemporary or wherever, or build a new resort. How do we raise that bar ourselves?
Right.
Because
we know how to
– there's people in this company that know how to do it.
Because even the recent stay we had just before we went on the cruise, we stayed at the Radisson in Port Canaveral, which is not – it's not an exquisite hotel.
Not by a long shot.
But the room there in some ways felt more elegant.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we did pay for a suite there, but yeah.
Than we did.
It was a very nice room.
Right, but since we pay for a suite, I'm just thinking as far as like an upper-level experience at a Disney – theme park. But once again, it came down. They had Sleep Number beds. And what makes a room more or less exquisite, more or less pampering, I think about the tub, I think about the lighting, I think about the bedding. I mean, and the fact that when at the Muse, they had this line of soaps and bath oils and whatever that had various sayings and philosophies on them, because the whole concept of the Muse is to attached to one's artistic nature and whatnot. And I think that, you know, Disney maybe, like he says, with the H2O, like Fanboy says, with the H2O, maybe just upping the level of product that they have when you come into the room, it presents a full image.
Well, and I think that there's not enough difference between your All-Stars and your Grand Floridian.
And why is that?
Because I think, Grand Floridian, I mean, there's been an acceleration of service in the hotel industry. And they're offering new amenities, and there's a lot of pressure. So in 1988 or 7 or whatever Grand Floridian opened, that was last week, they offered what they thought as like as a supreme resort experience. And then when they started opening moderates, and there's parts of it that they just can't give up because it's part of Disney. I mean, you're not going to offer them some. So you're just like, well, it's going to be moderate and value because the atmosphere is just not the same. But maybe we need to look at the Grand Floridian and Contemporary and Polynesian and say, hey, you know what? We need to offer those sleep number beds. We need to offer the deluxe shampoos and things like that. We need to offer an additional concierge level of service.
Now, the Grand Floridian did have specialty toiletries the time we stayed there. I remember that the cotton swabs were in a little box with the white rabbit and stuff like that. I mean, I remember that they had a more elegant toiletries, but the room I remember I was disappointed. When we stayed at the Grand, I wasn't that impressed.
Well, and I know that after 2001, there was a move at the Deluxe to, I don't want to say lower standards, but that it's easier to order 50 bazillion shampoos of the same kind for all the resorts than it was, to get the Grand Floridian shampoo and the All-Star shampoo. And I mean, obviously 2001 was a very tough time for Disney as well as the world. So, but maybe they need to go back and change their look.
So that was just interesting seeing that talk on the boards, because I love my Disney stays. I love when I'm at the Grand Floridian or the Grand Californian in California, obviously in California, I feel like I'm staying in luxury, having not done a Four Seasons or anything like that. But when I read that on the boards, and now in discussing it here, it is surprising that Disney hasn't taken some of their hotels to the next level in ways that they clearly can and still retain that Disney-ness that people expect.
And I just want to be clear. I think the cast at all those resorts offer an outstanding level of service.
Oh, definitely.
As well as the cast at the...
Yeah, but I think the cast does at every resort. This definitely isn't about the cast, because I think the cast at the All-Stars...
Right, and so when I say service, I don't mean that when I call for... towel, I don't get it. I'm talking about
Maybe that's one of the bigger challenges, because in some ways the Disney level of service is more what the standard is when you come to this type of service at a hotel. In some ways, when you go to the finer hotels, they give you what we as fans would consider, that Disney level of service.
Right.
So maybe that makes it a more competitive situation, and maybe Disney hasn't found their way to be that niche, their way to keep that Disney and yet have that.
I think
service.
They found their way, and it's called the Four Seasons.
Yeah. But the cruise line, doesn't the cruise line compete with, high quality?
I honestly don't
know. I've stayed at Four Seasons. I've stayed at Ritz-Carlton's, and
I've stayed at Ritz-Carlton's.
I've never stayed at JW Marriott, but I think the cruise line offers, for being a cruise line, that level of service. And, every time you go out of the room and come back, your bed's remade. And Disney doesn't have that on property, but I don't see that they need to license to get it.
Interesting discussion. I'm sure we'll pick it up at some point.
Before I know you want to move on to the next topic, but the one difference, I'd be curious to learn more about this, is what is it like when your hotel experience is this closely linked to a theme park experience? Because what other group or hotel is a high quality 5-star type location that is, on the doorstep of a theme park?
Well, one of the two that you mentioned earlier, though, was Portofino Bay, which is the same situation.
And the Radisson at Knott's.
The Portofino Bay. But the Portofino Bay is one of the major ones that comes to my mind immediately.
Right, and that's at Universal Studios.
Yeah, and I'm just curious if there's any others, because I wonder if just the whole environment of the reality of what it is to be in the theme park neighborhood, in some ways, in its own way, is a competitive.
And, of course, they always have to think about, you have to assume most of your guests are going to have children, which may not be the case at the Four Seasons or Ritz-Carlton or whatever. But there are still ways. As Fanboy said, he grew up going to Four Seasons and Ritz. Where did you weekend at, in the Hamptons?
I did not grow up going to the Four Seasons or the Ritz-Carlton. I do not have my Silver Spoon.
That's his nickname around here, Silver Spoon Fanboy.
It's interesting you mentioned Lowe's, though, at Universal. And they've been trying to break into that luxury hotel market and have just not been able to do it. Mm-hmm. And, not as much as a resort, but in metropolises. They have one in Philadelphia that we do BNI stayed at for the shareholder meeting. And it's they were trying real hard, and you still get little emails from – I still get emails from them saying, you know, we're a luxury resort destination. You're like, yeah, no, you're not. So, you know, it's easier to say than do, and I'll admit that.
Okay. One other news item this week is Disney has officially announced that they will open an attraction that I predicted wouldn't open, and that's Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. They said it's going to be opening on April 2nd, and I know its opening was delayed so they could make some changes. And, Fanboy, if you had a chance to see it since it's in its, quote, new incarnation?
I saw it, a couple days ago, or maybe about a week ago, and it was much different than when I saw it the first time. But please don't mean difference doesn't mean good. And
does it mean better?
I don't. That's like, you know, having your wisdom teeth pulled out or having a root canal. Which one? I mean, so when I was there, there were a lot of folks in the back with their little laptops still working on it. It didn't have a. It was definitely open, as in a soft opening. It was not a test show. It wasn't a focus group, but. I hope they're still working on it.
What was your impression of what the guests you were there with thought of it?
The only way I can gauge it is by laughter. And I was concerned we weren't going to be able to power Monstropolis. It was.
You said there was one especially funny joke early on. What was that?
Well, Roz, you know, is giving her a little introduction, and she says, "If you don't laugh, you might not be able to open the exit doors." And you giggle to kind of hope to get that little thing up, but then you realize that maybe you have a Haunted Mansion moment where this chamber has no windows and no doors, because I was concerned we weren't going to be able to open them. And that's got to kill their capacity. If they got to get the power to open the exit doors, they only can be able to cycle once an hour or so.
Wow, but how do you really feel about that?
I'm excited to see its new incarnation. I'm interested to see what tweaks they've made, because it'll give me an impression of where they're going with it, what they felt was working, what they feel will work. I noticed that annual pass holder previews begin March 30th and continue through the weekend, which means annual pass holders on April Fool's Day can go to Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor.
That is definitely a day.
That just seems like an appropriate way to celebrate the day. I'm hoping that I can talk Doobie into heading with me on April Fool's Day to Laugh Floor.
Pass holders are my favorite kind of fools.
So, yes, we are. Yes, we are the best.
Speaking of...
one change, though, that was interesting is they have this like two-headed monster. And the first time I saw the show, they were like a married couple. And then the next show I saw, they were brother and sister, which just seemed a little awkward.
Okay.
Oh, dude.
I hope that was old show, new show, not depending on the performance. Because Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor is a demonstration of the Living Characters program, right?
Yes, it is.
There's another demonstration of the Living Characters program over at Disneyland last week that got a lot of excitement in the internet community. If you haven't seen it, go to laughingplace.com. Oh. Take a look at the Muppet Mobile Labs.
I was excited because we spent a lot of money for those characters, and it's about time we did something with them.
Oh, that's true.
It's really, really cool. We're not going to talk about it a lot today, but if you get a chance, laughingplace.com. It should still be on the front page all week. Look for the Muppet Mobile Labs. We've got a lot of video from it, and it's quite impressive. If you saw Lucky the Dinosaur, this is definitely the next step in that, and it's pretty cool.
I was really surprised to read that they're hoping to get this technology to the point where they can operate these living characters from far away places. They mentioned, you know, like operating them from Burbank while the characters are in Anaheim, and I just found that very fascinating.
The goal, of course, is to be able to operate them from India. So that you can
outsourcing.
Yeah.
Well, then you don't have to hire illegal immigrants. You just put
they're
not American.
I wonder, I could see that being taken up by Congress. Is also on April 2nd, Grand Fiesta featuring the Three Caballeros opens in the Mexico Pavilion. And it's a fantastic title that features two actual Spanish words.
Can you once again say the title again?
Grand Fiesta. I mean, I'm sure if you really, it'd be like, Grand Fiesta featuring the Three Caballeros. That's opening April 2nd as well.
I'm looking forward to that. So April 2nd, we have to go to Magic Kingdom and Epcot. Good thing they've got monorails.
An interesting bit about the Grand Fiesta. The only place to find that information for a period of time was Disney Link, which is this desktop widget that the Disney companies come up with, you know, to send news and information to Disney fans. And you can, so, you know, I get the little message from Disney Link, you know, oh, I'm sorry, it's Tinkerbell chimes. And then I look and it says, you know, Grand Fiesta. And I'm like, woohoo. So I go to, you know, Disney.com, looking at Epcot. I couldn't find it anywhere else but the little Disney Link thing.
There
I thought
was
that
one
was
other place you could find
well,
it.
Well, okay, laughingplace.com and then the internet and all the internet fans and everything, but, you know, all the message boards. But I just found that really interesting that the only place it could be found for a while was Disney Link.
Wait, what I found interesting, going back to that sort of press release and how they do it, the press releases for the shareholder meeting came out, 3 seconds after they were talked about, and they would have Dick Cook comments on the meeting, and you're like, well, it just that didn't happen. But the first place that the pictures for Frog Princess was Disney Link again. They have all sorts of information about it. They know somebody.
Let this be a recommendation for Disney Link.
It does use up a bit of resources, though. So sometimes I have to turn it off if I'm wanting to do major work on my computer and stuff, because it will slow it down. But it's great for information and stuff. I keep it open most of the time.
Here at the Laughing Place Podcast, nothing is more important than accuracy. And in that vein, listen to this.
Hey guys, Brian Marshoff here of the Mousing It Up Podcast. Just listened to episode 25, and I had a little thing to add on to your little trivia at the end of the show. The thing about the Polynesian and the Contemporary, yeah, they opened at the same time as the Magic Kingdom, but then one of the guys threw in and Fort Wilderness. And, well, it did open the same year, but it actually didn't open October 1st with the Magic Kingdom and the Polynesian and the Contemporary. It opened a little later. It was November 19th, 1971. Just thought I'd throw that little trivia factoid your way. Talk to you later.
I stand corrected. I got confused because in the opening day special, Jonathan Winters pulled up and had a wonderful family vacation with all his comedic insanity there. I did not know that it had not opened yet because I was not born.
It warms my heart when Fanboy gets one wrong. It really does.
The know-it-all.
Here at laughingplace.com, we always encourage you to write us at podcast@laughingplace.com, and someone actually took us up on it.
Yay!
We got the nicest email. Normally, we don't read our piles and piles of fan mail because, you know,
we don't get it.
Well, other than that, we don't want to bore you. But, yeah, we don't get it. We get an occasional email. But we got a really nice one I just wanted to read a little bit of because I can. It's my show. He writes, "Your show is the best podcast out there to me. While it certainly is a bunch of Disney fans getting together and sharing in-jokes and great one-liners." Do we have in-jokes on our show?
Touche.
Yeah. "Your knowledge of the past and present of the company make you the most objective of the podcasts I've heard. Your humor makes it all the more entertaining." And we, in all honesty, we do pride ourselves on our knowledge of the company as a whole. We're not just a theme park or a trip planning or whatever. We do spend a lot of time studying Disney for our regular job and try to bring that here to the podcast as well as make it fun. So that in particular really made my day, to be honest. He went on to say, "Although you're milking the
Mr. Stokowski
thing as much as you can, I have to admit I laugh out loud on the crowded subway every time I hear it. People have actually moved slightly away from me when I've done it. Keep up the good work." He writes a little more that we may get into in a future podcast, but he signs it Terry in Chicago. Terry, thank you very much. I hope that is why they're moving away from you on the subway. I don't know you personally, but I'd like to think the
best. I know how you feel. People move away from me on the monorail all the time.
That made Fanboy's Day. Do it one more time for us.
Mr. Sikowski.
I love it.
What about that?
Wait, do Evelyn again.
Mr. Eidner! Mr. Eidner!
Yes, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to differentiate between Evelyn and Mickey Mouse for Fanboy over there, apparently. I'm sorry to say. Terry's email was great, and I really appreciated hearing from him, and that's it.
Thank you, Terry. And
you're in Chicago. Keep us posted on that Gateway to Disney Dreams.
Oh, that's right. Send some pictures to LP Live or yeah.
Because I'm a big. I mean, I'm not quite sure what it is because it's sort of shrouded in secrecy. It's a secret. But you know, I mean, going back to that whole investor thing. You know, when you get your proxy, there's always that Disney Visa thing, and And, you know, maybe a special deal at the Walt Disney World Resort. And, of course, a special deal for the Disney Vacation Club. I mean, shareholders for the Disney Vacation Club. Their marketing has no bounds.
Literally, their marketing has no bounds.
Yeah. Have we talked about the one-year billboard yet?
No, we haven't. We'll have to touch on that sometime.
We'll get to that in the future.
The one place that they didn't show up this year was ESPN The Weeknd. We were all shocked. There was no little DVC ad in any ESPN stuff.
No, they gave us that flyer. I mean, the brochure.
I wonder, maybe there. You know, we have three core brands. Maybe we're looking at the ESPN Vacation Club.
Oh, very funny.
Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. We always want to hear from you. Any last words, fanboy?
Mr. Eisner!
Rebecca?
Because of Terry's email, I'm making sure to add to my list of things I must do during my upcoming trip to Disneyland to make sure that I don't miss the storybook boats, because he mentions that as one of his childhood favorites in the later part of the email, and I like it too, so I'm going to have to remember to do that.
Sounds like fun. I think I'm going to go with you. I think
you're going to come with me on my trip to
Disneyland. I'm planning on it, and I think I'll do the storybook boats too, even though they haven't been the same since they allow male cast members, but you do what you can.
And people are still freaking out about that whole Toad Hall thing, aren't they?
Yes, they moved Toad Hall. But I like the addition of Agrabah.
Never mind.
Stop right there. And with that, I think we're done for this week. Look forward to talking to you again next week. Later.
Keep it magic.
Mr. Sikowski! Mr. Eisner! Mr. Sikowski! Mr. Eisner! Mr. Sikowski! Mr. Eisner!